50 years on, she, her 93-year-old mother, and the rest of the Harun family are still seeking justice. They have announced the Imam Abdullah Harun Foundation and the 50th Commemoration Committee, which aims to honor Mr. Harun's life and martyrdom, as well as focus on social justice issues. Now, Ms. Fatima Harun Masood, the daughter of the late anti-apartheid activist Imam Abdullah Harun, now joins me on the line. Fatima, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Very good evening, Karima, and good evening to all your listeners.
Now, of course, this is a very, very long time ago. I remember my mother being a young woman. And when I was born, I was told about when Imam Abdullah Harun was killed in detention. And of course, there's the anecdote of the tremor that was experienced during the time of his death and his burial. Why has it taken so long for the family to now reopen the inquest into the death of your father? Are you encouraged by, for example, what happened in the Ahmed Timol case?
Well, Karima, and to you, for the benefit of your listeners, at the time when the TRC was at his home in terms of trying to get justice, get prosecution done for those perpetrators. My mother felt at the time, in her wisdom, I would say, that justice would definitely be denied. For some odd reason or other, we couldn't fathom that. But so many years down the line, it has been discovered that there was definitely some kind of political interference. But that said and done, we needed to have the blessings of our mother. Mm. And in the last 3 or 4 months, my mother knows all our lives. My sister, my older sister, my brother, and myself, we've been deeply aggrieved in terms of our father's gruesome murder. And we've never had real closure. We, as the children, have suffered considerable psychological trauma in terms of the way he died.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I was 6 years old, my brother was then 13, and my sister was then 17 years old. They had a more better understanding in terms of what took place at that particular time, even if they were young children.
Mm-hmm.
I was still a baby, if you can say that, at the age of 6 years old. But growing up without a father figure in the house, learning from the elders and my mother particularly, in terms of the entire devastation that it had on her psychologically, and it had a great impact on my upbringing. So in terms of that, we needed closure. And recently she has given us a blessing, and with this, and in the same breath, we have kept her up to date with regards to the Timol matter,
mm-hmm.
which has now, the case has really had great success until
yes.
now. And for us, we have drawn the encouragement and the inspiration to take this matter forward, because there's a loophole, there's an opening, and there's hope.
Yes. Now, your father was arrested in May and died on the 27th of September in 1969. The foundation, Mr. Kasim Khan, says that an inquest was done that same year, but the family did not accept its findings, which stated that your dad tripped and had fallen down a flight of stairs. Now, many activists have, of course, heard the stories about people who have supposedly fallen down flights of stairs or jumped out of buildings
yes.
or slipped on pieces of soap. This has become part of the legend of what it means to have been detained at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And your father, who was a Muslim cleric at that time, died after 4 months in solitary confinement while being detained under the notorious apartheid security laws. And at the time, he was appointed the Imam of the Claremont Mosque in 1955. And at the time, he was one of the youngest Imams ever. Now, you have formed a foundation in his honor. Tell us what is going to be the work and the focus of this foundation, and what do you hope to achieve through setting up this foundation?
So the Imam Haram Foundation was established on the 12th of August of 2018. And as from the outset, we dedicated the foundation to be inclusive of all its activities and to continue to reach out to people and groups from all walks of life with whom he worked and with whom he did not work. Now, Karima, my father was a religious leader, a political activist, an exceptionally spiritual person, a sports lover, enthusiast, always interested in the arts and culture and activities across the religious barrier and across the barrier of color. And in terms of this, he always had a warm presence and great concern, and his love for people, and whether it be in a mosque, on a rugby field, or in a corner shop, and particularly in the townships, Langa, Guguletu, and Nayanga. For the benefit of the listeners, these were the main townships, particularly in the 50s and the 60s, where the Africans were forcibly removed or pushed into love.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, at that particular time, also for the benefit of your listeners, my father was able to gain access to these townships. The reason why is he worked for a company called Roundtrees, and he used to sell chocolates.
Yes.
And that was one of the ways that he was able to get into the township, because he could, you know, act out that he's now a sales rep, and that is one way of getting in. So by him able to move around easily in the townships, he was fondly known as Umfundisi. Umfundisi means priest. So, I mean, he was well respected. He gave African people humane treatment, particularly the priest and the children, a love. He gave affection towards children, and in turn, the children loved him as well. And at the same token, you know, he also traveled abroad often. He went to London, he went to the Middle East, and he was able to gain access, financial access for the people that was imprisoned.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he was involved with the PAC movement, particularly the gentleman who's now passed on, the late Barney Desai,
yeah,
who wrote the book, The Killing of the Imam. So he moved across, even though he lived also in an oppressive system,
yes,
he was able and capable to move overseas and to inform you know, members of the PAC and the ANC that what was currently happening in South Africa in that particular time.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the color barriers and the apartheid spatial planning, particularly in places like Cape Town, is actually still in place. I mean, often we talk about the dividing line between, say, Bonthewel and Langa, Bonthewel and Guguletu, and people are still quite separated from each other and hardly ever interact with each other. How does the foundation hope to overcome this and bring communities together, particularly poor communities who face the same problems as people face then, issues of marginalization, access to education, access to proper health care, access to proper housing, and so forth?
You know, talking about education, if I just can just step into that, we do have an Imam Abdullah Harun Education Trust, which has been established 14 years ago. And, I mean, I know we're not here to talk about the Education Trust, but I need to just fill your listeners in. The Trust has been trying to do their small bit,
yes,
in groundwork in early childhood development and giving bursaries to students.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to access the marginalized and the oppressive communities in terms of giving them funding.
Yes.
You know, so that bit of memory and legacy we try to keep alive through the Imam Abdullah Harun Education Trust. Coming to the foundation, which was obviously recently established, now we want to focus with people that my father not only knew, but organizations that he has worked with in that particular time, and also organizations that has now extended that kind of work, focusing on youth, on women, on sports, across the section of faith and political groups. And my father was incarcerated for 123 days. And also, just to remind you listeners, for the entire 123 days, because my father was deeply religious, he decided to fast for the entire 123 days. So even when they did the autopsy does say his stomach was empty. Yes, a few days before his death, my mother was informed by the security branch that she no longer should be sending any food. They will sort out the food for him. And she couldn't understand why is it that they, you know, that they, because he used to love his soup, his coffee and his sweets. He was a, you know, he had a sweet tooth. So, you know, part of the autopsy was, as I said before, that his stomach was empty. So because of his deep religious affiliation to Allah or God, he decided to fast. And this was part of how he managed to, I would say, challenge the system and also keep his faith strong in his belief in sacrificing his life, not for himself, but for others.
Now, in this period that your father was incarcerated, he obviously had no access to lawyers, no access to family. When the inquest was finally held, what was the origin or the reason they found that your father had passed away?
So, there was a judgment at that particular time, and the magistrate's name was Kun, Magistrate Kun. And his findings in terms of Section 16 of that particular act in 1971, my memory serves me right, according to his findings, he said that death was brought about by any act or omission involving or amounting to an offence on the part of any person. A substantial part of the said trauma was caused by an accidental, now listen to this carefully, fall down a flight of stone stairs. Now, Karima, we did visit the prison, Maitland Police Station, that is where his body was. He was moved around between Toba, Caledon's Police Station, as well as Maitland. And we went there, it was five steps. So, if I'm going to force myself to fall off those steps, I'm definitely not going to die. I might hurt my leg or my arm, but I'm not going to die of an injury, of a short fall like that. So so this is what he said. You know, the trauma was caused by an accidental fall down a flight of stone stairs. On the available evidence, this is what the magistrate Kuhn had said, and he said that he's unable to determine how the balance thereof was caused. What was the balance? 26 bruises, Karima. 26 bruises on my father's body. My mother said the day my father left the house when he was arrested, he had no bruises on his body, nothing. So, I mean, we as a children, we have a right to know how he died. Justice has been denied, but to bring closure, we have a right to be told and be informed after months of being 4 months or 123 days, he's been incarcerated. After months of torture, he came home to us with extensive bruises and scars on his body. And we want to know exactly what happened. It is our right to know.
Now, I know in the Timmel case, we have now got certain police officers that have been charged. And of course, you know, the buck has been passed there all the time. And in the Ahmed Timmel case, it was said that he had jumped, you know, from a window at the police station and died as a result of that. And many families simply did not believe the police and believed that their family members were in fact murdered at the hands of the police. Are there any police men or women that your family has been informed that either looked after your father or was responsible for his medication or his food? Is there somebody whose name can come to mind when you think of your father's incarceration that you want questioned, that you want interviewed during the reopening of this case?
The people that we know, the notorious special branch, Van Wyk and Guinness, we are told that they have passed on.
Mm.
You know, they were the two main people. But the people also that assisted them and were part of the police state at that particular time, at this point in time, I can't disclose any such information because we have requested for the inquest to be reopened. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't like for you to, with respect for your listeners to understand, you know, I wouldn't want to have any grayness over the matter at hand because it's quite a sensitive matter and we need to deal with it step by step and we need to be careful as to how it's going to be managed.
Now, of course, it's been a long time ago, and as you said, two of the main individuals have passed away, but there are a set of other individuals that could well be implicated, and I understand the sensitivities around that. What are the time frames, Fatima, that we are looking at? Have you had any communication from either a magistrate or the National Prosecuting Authority about when this matter will be reopened? Because in the case of the Timol family, it was, of course, the nephew of Ahmed Timol that persisted with this case and never actually gave up. And eventually the matter was heard. And of course, now there is closure for the family. Justice is going to be served. And someone is actually going to be held accountable for his death. What kind of time frames have been given to you around how this matter will work, given that it's quite a sensitive issue?
The time frame I can't answer you because, you know, if you look at the history of the Timol matter, it's taken, it dragged on for many, many years.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we do realize the impact of time.
Mm.
But we won't give up hope. Like Imtiaz Kaji, he never gave up hope. He persistently continued and had the courage to continue dealing with the matter of his uncle. So in the same token, same breath, we've been waiting for 50 years. Another extra few months is not going to bring about a difference, but it will bring about a change.
Mm.
So we will have to be patient. We need to work on the word patience because, and pray and put our trust in God that things will work out the way it should to bring about justice.
Now, I understand that a film was made about Imam Harun's life by one of your relatives. Can you tell us about that film and what that film highlights about who he was and his contribution to the fight against injustice at the time?
Okay. Now, my nephew, it's my oldest sister who lives in England, it's her son. He studied filmmaking and he was on this journey of wanting to know. Born in London, grew up in London, but he always heard about Imam Abdullah Harun. And he made it his mission and his life's work to come and live in South Africa. His name is Khalid Shamis. There might be some of your listeners that might know who he is. He lives in South Africa now. He made it his life's passion to search for his grandfather. And a few years ago, he put together this documentary called Imam and I.
Mm.
And the documentary is based on the man. Who was Imam Abdullah Harun?
Mm.
You know, what kind of person was he? What kind of character did he have? How did he interact with the community? What kind of imam was he? You know, deals with his character and then deals with his political life. Also his married life. And there's four parts to the documentary. Until, of course, the death in detention that deals with Imam and I. The book called the book that Barney Desa wrote called The Killing of the Imam. I need to inform your listeners about this. While my father was in prison, he was able to smuggle out some letters.
Mm.
Now, at that time, my mother sent him soup in a flask.
Mm.
And that time those flasks was fairly big. And then you have this metal part or glass part that you could lift from the outer part of the flask. So then he put the letter, he managed to get the letters out. And it was always coded. And the letters went eventually to London, to Barney Desai, so he can codify what was being said and how he was being tortured and what kind of questions they asked him. So Barney Desai's book was more political in terms of more or less an account of what happened to my father while he was in prison for that 123 days. The book depicts the man, the personality, the character, the husband, the family man, and a conscious imam in terms of how he has to deal with society and his contribution and his responsibility towards society. And, of course, then it goes into his political part when he was in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So the book deals deeper when it comes to his political career.
Yeah. Now tell me, Fatima, where is this book available? And also the documentary that your nephew made. How does one's listeners get a hold of it? Is it available in public places? Is it available at the foundation? How does one get a hold of the book and of the documentary itself?
Unfortunately, the book is not available at public places,
mm-hmm.
but the documentary as well as the book is available from me, or my nephew, because he will make copies. And, if people request, we will either post or he will either ensure that there's postage, probably that must be paid, but we'll post it to relevant people. And also the book, if people are very keen and interested to buy a copy of the book, they're most welcome to contact me.
Okay, can you give us a telephone number where people can get a hold of you, Fatima, in case they are interested in either the book or the video?
Okay, I'll give you my cell number. I am on WhatsApp, so preferably if people can WhatsApp me or message me, I will return. My number is 0833-678-176.
Okay, let me repeat that. Fatima Haroon Masood's number is 176. The number again, 0833-678-176. Yes. And that is, of course, if you want to get hold of the book or the video. Fatima Masood, thank you so very much for your time. And we will, of course, keep track of the progress made in the attempts to find justice for your father and for those who had a hand in his death. And we will, of course, track the story. Thank you very much for making the time to come onto the program. That is the daughter of the late anti-apartheid activist Imam Abdullah Haroon. Her name is Fatima Haroon Masood. And, of course, she has given out her telephone number for those who are keen on getting the video or the book.